brought to you by bedroombattlefield.com. This is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Five Parsecs from Home is the main game on my radar right now, and I've been deep into it for the past couple of months. On this episode, I'm going to play you the first of my Five Parsecs audio diary entries, originally released as Patreon bonus content. These entries document me setting up my crew and piloting them through their first three campaign turns. Here we go. So this is the first entry in my Five Parsecs diary. It's a Patreon series. So on the main podcast, you maybe heard me talking a wee bit about Five Parsecs from Home. It's a game that I'm really now getting into. It's something that I've been able to do, you know, in the form of reading the book, like away from the table, away from the painting desk. And I've rolled up a crew and I'm pretty much ready to play my first game. So I wanted to open this series by just giving you a bit of background on the crew and on that first mission that I've got as well. So basically my crew, they're a bunch of outlaws, predominantly human. It's five humans and one, is it a bot or an android? Sorry, I can't remember the exact term, a robot basically. So yeah, a bunch of criminals led by an ex-crime lord, a sort of mafia-style boss called Dante Corsaro. And he has basically instigated a prison break. He's taken these four other guys with him, you know, criminals of various backgrounds. And they have escaped the penal planet on a former mining ship. So I've got this ex-mining ship. I've named it Old Reliable in a kind of ironic way. So it's got the fuel hog trait, which makes it a little more expensive for me to travel to other worlds. So yeah, Dante and these five other humans, and then the android as well that we've got. Sorry if I'm using the wrong terminology there, but you get the picture. So he's called Tinhead, and the way I see it, he basically came with the ship. So he's an ex-security bot for whatever mining corporation it was. So they basically found him on the ship and did what they need to do to enlist him as well. So he's called Tinhead, and I've got a wee bit more about him coming up. First and foremost, though, I'll get to the name of the crew is the Lucky Strikes. And we started with only 10 credits, which I think is pretty low in the grand scheme of things. And two rivals as well. We've got two rivals to start the game with. And we begin on a world called Phrenavos. So again, they've escaped this penal planet that they were on. They've landed on this world called Phrenavos. And it turns out that you need a license to operate on this world, and it was going to cost 6 credits. I rolled a 6 there. So Dante himself had a fake ID in the crew's stash, and this enabled them to get a forged license. So at that point, you know, all seemed well. But then when we looked at the world itself, it turns out I had an interdiction, which means that I must leave the world after 2 campaign turns. So that's not ideal at all, because based on how much money the crew had, you know, and the ship debt and the cost, the extra cost of the fuel, I really was hoping to spend some serious time on this world, but that's not going to be possible now because, yeah, I'll be able to do this campaign turn and the next, and then I'm going to have to leg it. So again, this all ties in narratively with the fact that this is an outlaw gang and they're, you know, they're presumably being pursued. They probably can't stay in any one place for too long anyway. So from a flavour point of view, this all makes perfect sense. So the first thing I did was to assign those tasks to my crew. So, you know, some of them could train, some of them could trade, some of them could explore. And Tinhead, who I referenced earlier, I sent him out to explore and he basically got lost. So I had to roll up to find out whether we were able to locate him, because if not, he was going to miss the battle. So yeah, he got lost. We managed to find him, sent him, you could send him back out to explore again. He got lost again, so I had to go out and find him for a second time. And then it turns out he's like, you know what, I love this world so much that I might just stay here. So basically, when we leave this world, I've got to spend, I think I've got to spend a story point to take him with me, because he really likes this place. That's obviously why he keeps getting lost. I think there's something going on that we're not fully aware of there. But good old Tinhead got lost twice and now he really wants to stay. So, yeah, with that all done with the crew, we were ready then to think about the first battle. And because I've got these two rivals, there was a small chance that I was going to encounter one of them, and that actually happened as well. I wasn't rolling very well at all. I was rolling sixes when that was a negative thing, and I was rolling lowly when that was a negative as well. So, yeah, it turns out the crew are being pursued by this group of cyborgs. I've named them Directive Zero, and I basically see them as, you know, they've been sent out by the prison company, or the company that operates the penal world that they escaped from. So for this enemy crew, I'm using my Terminator 2 miniatures, like the cyborgs from, I think they were from River Horse back in the day, from I'm sure they had the Terminator 2 license game. So good opportunity to get those on the table. So yeah, in this first encounter, they're going to be fighting their rivals, Directive Zero, going to be fighting six of those. And we have a priority target as well. So basically, one of these cyborgs, whether it's the leader or maybe it just has some sort of important information on it, we're going to have to try and take down this particular cyborg. So that'll make things interesting. And what will certainly make things interesting and challenging is the fact that this counts as an ambush. So they have ambushed us, meaning that instead of starting with a deployment of a complement of six, I'm going to have to drop one of those and start with five. In fact, I'm going to have to play the entire game with five. I'm going to have to start the game with less, because in the deployment conditions, I rolled up delayed, which says two random crew members won't start on the table. At the end of each round, roll 1d6. If the roll is equal or below the round number, they may be placed at any point of your own battlefield edge. So this basically means I'll be starting the battle with only three crew members against six. And, you know, I could add two at some point, but I don't know when that's going to be. So, you know, for my very first game of this, I don't really know what I'm doing tactically or that. It's going to be a real challenge here. And, you know, I don't really hold out much hope. I think it really will just be about trying to keep my guys alive and relatively safe. And if I technically lose the battle, which I think I will, then we'll deal with the outcome of that afterwards. But yes, it makes things very challenging. But again, this is all part of the fun and the narrative flavour of this game. So I am looking forward to that, but I don't hold out much hope for whatever crew members end up being deployed for this one. So that's basically it. That's my crew, the Lucky Strikes, led up by Dante Corsaro and their ship, the ex-mining vehicle Old Reliable. So they're going to be taking on these cyborg rivals of theirs and see how that goes. But I'm just really looking forward to setting that game up and playing through it now. And I will report back in my next diary entry on how they got on and what's going to happen next. So thank you very much for listening. Thanks very much for supporting me through Patreon. And I'll speak to you on the next one. Okay then, so the Lucky Strikes find themselves pursued by the rivals, a group of cyborgs known as Directive Zero. They've been sent to track down the Lucky Strikes and take them back to the penal colony that they were imprisoned on. And they're currently on a world called Frenavos, which they basically, their days are numbered here. They're going to have to get off due to an interdiction, was it called? So we're going to have to get off this world as soon as possible. And that assumes, of course, that they survive this upcoming battle. So they're attacked. It's an ambush by these cyborgs. And that meant that I was first and foremost only going to be able to start with 5 of my crew as opposed to 6. So I rolled up randomly to find out who would be sitting out this time around, and it was Colt Narrow, who's this sort of frontier ganger turned criminal. I guess you're a criminal anyway if you're a frontier ganger, aren't you? But that's all legal semantics. So yeah, he was going to sit out. He was unavailable. Maybe he'd went off to the shops or something when this ambush happened. But it wasn't just that challenge that was facing me, because a further two of my crew were going to be delayed in turning up as well. So another random roll determined that that would be Tinhead, the android, because of course, and the leader, Dante Corsaro, he would be delayed in arriving as well. So I was only starting with 3 of my crew. That was going to be Dust, Callus, Tace Bruin, and Jaren Creed. They were going to be starting off against 6 of these androids from Directive Zero. So these androids, they're the security bot enemy type. So they fight in quite a defensive formation. Basically, they'll kind of come towards you, but they won't kind of come any further than around about halfway over the table, and then they'll just basically try and shoot some holes in you. So they're armed with shotguns as well, and there was one particular cyborg as part of this battle that was of special interest to me. So there was one of them in particular that I was going to have to try and take down. Another couple of things to mention with these androids, these cyborgs, they're immune to morale and they've got a toughness of 5 as well. So this is the first time I've actually played a battle, and you know that quickly became apparent that toughness 5 is quite tough. So it's pretty hard to take these guys down. And what I found as well is I really didn't have much range in my crew. Starting off, 2 of the guys, I think one of them had a range of about 24, the other one a range of about 36. So that was fine. To get some shots away at them before they were in range of us, the shotguns are about 12 inches in range. So the cyborgs had to do a bit of advancing before they could get any shots at us. But I think it was Tace Bruin, his weapon only had a range of 8, so he was basically, I just kind of kept him in cover for the first few turns. So yeah, that was kind of how we started, just hiding around the corner, trying to get some pot shots away. And not, like I say, not having a lot of luck, not having any luck really at doing any damage on these guys. And it was round 3 before I finally got my other two guys on the table. So Tinhead and Dante arrived. And at that point, things look like they're actually going to end up pretty well for me, because I've suddenly got, you know, it's not quite a full complement because obviously one of the guys is missing out entirely. But just as my reinforcements arrive, Dust gets a shot off against one of these cyborgs and takes them out. So they're reduced from 6 that they were to now 5. I've got my reinforcements there. And at that point, I'm thinking to myself, you know, just stay in cover, try and pick them off, and we probably can do something here. But things quickly went south for me then, because, well, before they went south, actually, you know, if you've played Parsecs before, you have the opportunity to see if you could go first before the enemy. You have to roll under your reaction score. So I basically rolled 5 dice. I was looking for only 1s and 2s. And that's exactly what I got. It was pretty much the only time in the game that I rolled well. So I got all these 1s and 2s, which meant I could activate my entire crew before any of the enemy activated. So I had a real opportunity then to take the initiative and do a lot of damage. And my shooting at that point was just terrible. And then when they retaliated, one of them picked off Tace. So he went down. He was out of the game. And then Dust as well quickly followed them. So I suddenly lost 2 of my crew, and then straight away you're on the back foot again. And at that point, pretty much all of the cyborgs had got themselves into range, so they weren't going to advance anymore. They were just going to stand. They were going to aim as well, which meant that they could re-roll ones when they were rolling to hit. So it was just a line of fire, basically. And I was trying to stick to my cover to make it a little bit harder for them. But then they took out Jaren, so that was three down. And then he was very quickly followed by Tinhead, which left only Dante. And at that point, you know, there was still five androids. I think one of them was stunned and that was it. So he just had to put his tail between his legs and flee the table, basically, because it just wasn't worth keeping him on there to get shot up as well. Because I was already starting to think, like, you know, in the first battle, are some of these guys literally going to be dead? And if not, how much is this going to cost me? It sounds a bit brutal, but yeah, how much will this cost me, this defeat, financially? Because I've already not got very much money. So he fled the table and that was the end of it. So very much a defeat in the battle itself, but of course Parsecs doesn't end there. And then you move on to the post-battle sequence, which, I mean, I say I was really quite looking forward to it. I was, from a gaming point of view, but it certainly wasn't going to be pretty for the Lucky Strikes in the story world itself. So we were somehow awarded four credits for that miserable performance. I'm not really sure. Maybe there was like a passerby who found the whole thing hilarious and just handed them a fiver or whatever. So we got four credits for that mess. And then we actually found a cargo crate of six credits as well. So that kind of, those were some unexpected rewards when we really didn't deserve any rewards at all. Turning to the injury list then, I had a look at Tinhead first and foremost, got him on the workbench to see, you know, all the bullet holes in him, see what sort of damage he'd encountered. So I rolled up severe damage, so he's going to miss the next two turns. As for my human crew, Jaren, he's a sort of ex-military guy. He rolled up crippling wounds and it turns out that he's going to spend three turns in the sick bay, and that's going to cost five credits as well. So that was a pretty sore one. I'd found, you know, 10 credits somehow after that, and straight away 50% of those credits are taking up fixing all Jaren's wounds. Dust, his weapon was damaged. He was fine. It was just his weapon, which was unfortunate because I can't remember, was it an auto rifle or something? It was pretty good. It had a decent range on it, but that's damaged. He won't have to sit out any campaign turns, fortunately. So I just bought him a shotgun straight away. You could buy them for one credit because the repairs, which I'll do next time around, I'll do that in the pre-battle sequence, is it called? But repairing a weapon is tricky and it could be costly. So I've just got him a shotgun in the meantime just to make sure he's going to be armed with something. As for Tace, he suffered minor injuries and he'll miss one turn. So as it stands, in the next campaign turn, in the next battle, I'm only going to be able to field three of them. And that is, of course, unless I decide to recruit, which brings its own challenges. It gets more expensive. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see what I do there. I'm not going to deal with that stage just yet. That'll be in my next diary entry. But yeah, that was the injury list there. So next, we were looking at the campaign events table to find out what had happened there. And I rolled up, it's time to go. Whatever you did, every campaign turn you stay on this planet, you must add an additional rival. So I think that's really in keeping with how things are going on this planet. We already pretty much have to leg it, get out of Dodge on the next campaign turn. And this just reinforces that because we've obviously attracted so much heat here that, yeah, we're just going to have to get as far away from the place as possible. So as if my hand wasn't forced already, I think that's pretty much decision confirmed. And you know, I'll have to seriously consider getting us off this world for the next turn. As for the crew themselves, although Jaren is badly injured, a very costly injury, and he's going to be out for three turns, he did manage somehow to make some friends, and he got himself one XP. So I don't know if that's a doctor or a nurse or something like that, but he's made himself a friend or friends. So good on you, Jaren, whilst you lie there in the sick bed, contributing nothing and draining the crew's finances. So after that, it was just there was a couple of XP points to assign to the crew members for basically taking part. We obviously didn't win, so they didn't get a lot. But it takes them up a wee bit towards being able to maybe upgrade some skills or whatever. As it stands then, the credits in the kitty stands at 11. Before we head into turn two, we still have two rivals. If we stay here any longer, that'll increase. We've got five story points. We're still on Fravos, but that obviously has to change as soon as possible. So it sounds like our ship, Old Reliable, is going to have to get a run out. It's a fuel hog. It's going to be quite expensive to try and relocate, but I think it's completely necessary at this stage. So in my next entry, we're going to look at what I've decided to do, if I've decided to recruit anyone, and if we're moving on, which I think we will be, where we're going to be heading next, and if these Directive Zero cyborgs have decided to follow us. So then we move into campaign turn two, and I was really going to have to get off the world. I think that was pretty clear from the last diary entry. So, of course, we're going to opt to travel. And that's going to cost us 6 credits because Old Reliable, our ex-mining ship, is a fuel hog. So straight away, 6 credits out. And then I was also kind of worried about what might happen on the way as well and whether that was going to cost any more money. Before we did leave, of course, I had to spend a story point because Tinhead, he really liked where we were and he wanted to stay. So we basically had to drag him onto the ship. And when I was going to say set sail, is it set sail when you go into space? When we took off, fortunately I rolled up time to reflect. So it simply said, how is the story unfolding? What did it all mean? And it added that story point back. So in the end, no harm done with Tinhead's little sojourn a couple of times on that last planet. And where we're going now is a world called Valtheris. And we don't need a license to operate on this planet. And it's a world with a lot of bot manufacturing technology. So it says that all bot upgrades are 1 credit cheaper as well. So I'm interested to find out if that could become important further down the line. Tinhead at the moment, of course, he's still lying on the workbench, getting bullets picked out of him. The crew has 2 rivals, and of course, both are going to follow us. That was what I rolled up there. So, Directive Zero is one of the rivals that we do have. That's the cyborgs that have been trying to track us down. And the other rival at this stage remains a mystery, but they've nonetheless followed us here to Valtheris as well. So, I had to spend 1 credit on the crew upkeep. And because of lack of cash, I've made no payments at all on the ship, and that puts my debt back up to 25. So it's just, I basically didn't have enough money to do anything with the ship at this stage. But at a certain point, I can't remember if it's 35 credits, if I go into debt by another 10 credits, then the repayments become even more extreme, the interest rates go up. And I know you can get to a stage further on if you get so far into debt that your ship could literally become repossessed. So I hope to not get to that stage. But right now, I couldn't afford to make any payments on the ship. So as I'd said in the last diary entry, I'm going to be missing 3 of my crew members in whatever battle it is that we fight. Tinhead's going to be out, Jaren's going to be out, and Tace as well. So I did consider recruiting a 7th crew member. That comes at a cost as well. That would put the upkeep costs up. But when I looked into it, it was actually quite unlikely to succeed. Like if I'd sent someone out there to try and recruit, I just don't think I would have managed it, basically. So I decided against that. I only had 3 crew members who could do the tasks. Obviously, the ones in the sick bay, you can't send them out there to trade or explore or anything like that. So I just had 3 of them to work with. So with those two rivals following me, I decided that Dante, my leader, would go out there and try and act as a decoy, try and trick them into turning up somewhere else. So I sent him out there as a decoy, or he sent himself, given that he is actually the captain. Dust and Colt, I sent them out to look for patrons as well, and they actually found two, so that was good. Not just one, but two patrons. So the crew were hired by the sector government. It was worth an initial 2 credits of danger pay, and the job must be done this turn. So there was no additional benefits, hazards, or conditions. And because of Dante's clever decoy trick, the rivals didn't manage to track down the crew, which means we could go ahead and do this patron mission. So as for the battle, it's going to be a bitter struggle, which means the enemy morale is at +1. And in terms of documentation, we'll gain a quest rumour as well. The objective is to protect a VIP, and I'll be facing 5 opponents. So this threw up the opportunity to create a decent little story around this, which I've duly gone ahead and done. So let me just read that to you now. The owner of a popular chain of budget pubs on Valtheris has blamed a recent spate of plagues on the government's chief epidemiologist, Dr. Septimus Blight. The android alehouse keeper, also known as Tin Martian, claims Blight isn't curing the plagues, he's causing them, and in doing so has devastated the planet's once booming hospitality industry. Though these allegations have been vehemently denied by the Valtherian government, Tin Martian may have finally found the proof he needs. The flustered Dr. Blight recently left a briefcase of important documents in a particularly unpleasant area the locals refer to as the Sludge Basin. It's unclear what business Blight had in the Sludge Basin, though he's since claimed it's part of his important role as patron of a sick rats charity. Martian has hired Ruddles Asset Recovery, a notorious firm of bounty hunters, to obtain the briefcase from the Sludge Basin. The Valtherian government haven't been so lucky in their quest to hire anyone stupid enough to accompany Blight back down there to retrieve his property. In the end, they've had to put their faith in a beleaguered gang of fugitives called the Lucky Strikes. Or what's left of them, anyway. So will it be last orders for Dr. Blight, or can the Lucky Strikes get him safely into a taxi before it all kicks off outside the chippy? So there you go then, that's a little bit of a narrative leading into this battle. So I'm going to be taking on this group of bounty hunters. I've got a really cool gang of miniatures that will work well for that. It's Fed Trooper miniatures from Checkpoint. And I've got a little Plague Doctor miniature from Midlum, who's going to act as the notorious Dr. Blight. So in this type of mission, it's called Protect. It says you'll be accompanied by a VIP character. They are unarmed and may never initiate a brawl, but will defend normally. They cannot be given any equipment. The VIP must set up at least 12 inches from the centre of the table. The enemy must set up 12 inches from the centre on their side. Treat the VIP as another member of your crew. If the VIP spends a full round within 3 inches of the centre of the table, you win. If you achieve this within the first 4 rounds of the game, you earn an additional 2 credits in pay. So with only 3 proper crew members, I'm almost certain I'm not going to be able to do this, but I'm just going to have a go and see what happens. But yeah, I think like the important thing really before trying to succeed in this mission is just not to have anyone shot to bits and end up on the treatment table as well, because I can't afford to lose any more of these guys. I think I've got Taste coming back in the next round, so all being well, I'll have 4 available for whatever battle I fight next. But yeah, if I lose anyone in this one, it'll be a disaster. So I'm really going to be super careful about this. First sign of any harm coming to my guys, and I'm afraid that old Dr. Blight is on his own. We're just going to flee the table. But I think we need to stay there for at least 2 turns or we won't get any XP at the end of it. So yeah, I'm not confident at all. I genuinely don't think I'll be able to do this. One thing that has given me a slight glimmer of hope, I realised that I In the previous battle, when I fought Directive Zero, I realised I'd made a mistake and I'd actually given them specialist weapons, so they were all armed with shotguns, and that obviously did quite a lot of damage to us, you know, each time they were able to shoot us. So I'd made a mistake there. They shouldn't have had... Those are basically weapons reserved for the specialist NPCs, as far as I could see. So I'd made a slight mistake there, and I was also a bit lax with the stunned mechanic as well. Sometimes I was shooting these cyborgs and I should have had them as stunned and I didn't. So I've slightly screwed myself there and I need to be a bit more diligent about that going into this battle, especially, like I say, as I only have 3 crew members. They have 5, so it's not an absolute disaster. But yeah, first sign of trouble, I'll be out of there. So that is it for this diary entry of my 5 parsecs diary. And I'm looking forward to the next entry, which will report on how it all went. All right then, so we've just finished our battle there. And I'm delighted to say and slightly surprised to say that the Lucky Strikes and Dr. Blight were victorious. Blight managed to recover his suitcase, his briefcase, and the Ruddles asset recovery bounty hunters have been sent off, or certainly what's left of them. They've been sent away with their tails between their legs. So they were, like I say, they were a bounty hunter troop type, and they were armed with colony rifles, which had a range of 18 inches. So they had a lieutenant and a specialist. And the lieutenant had a marksman's rifle that had a range of 36 inches, and the specialist had a hunting rifle, a range of 30 inches and a point of damage too. These were heavy weapons, which meant there was a slight penalty if you moved and then shot. But nevertheless, I was facing, you know, I was outnumbered, and not only that, but pretty much outgunned, because these guys all had a decent range on them. And my only real range option was Dust with his auto rifle, which had a range of 24 inches. You know, apart from that, I've got Colt with a scrap pistol, range of 9 inches, and Dante's got this dueling pistol as well, a range of 8 inches. So it wasn't like I could just kind of sit back and try and pick these guys off. Had to do something bold, and I know I said in the last diary entry that I was going to be very cautious here. I mean, I still was cautious, but a big part of the plan was to just get Dante into the middle of the board to draw fire. Not because I was trying to sacrifice him, or again, he's the captain, not that he was trying to sacrifice himself, but just because cover was pretty good, and also he's got this combat armour which gave him a little bit of extra protection as well. So he got himself forward in the middle. I had Dust going down the left flank to try and find some cover where he could maybe get an angle and get a couple of shots away, and then Colt would go down the right, which was completely covered, and try and kind of get around the corner and draw some of them away as well, because it was a big firing line down the middle. If I'd moved the Doctor up early, he probably would have just got shot to bits. So the enemy morale as well was at +1. So if and when you kill any of them, there's an opportunity that some of them will panic and flee, and that had made that slightly more difficult as well. So we failed to seize the initiative at the start of the game, but to be honest, most of the rounds I did manage to get those quick reactions in, those early activations, and I think that helped us out a wee bit, just being able to get into good positions first. Dante was getting himself into the middle. He was drawing a lot of fire, but keeping his head down. And like I'm saying, Dust got up into a good position, and he started to get a few shots away at the lieutenant and the specialist. This lieutenant, he was really dangerous, because his extra combat skill meant that he could hit somebody in cover even on a 4+. It's usually a 6 for that. So he only needed a 4 or up to hit you, even if you were in cover. Fortunately, I was rolling very badly on his behalf, which was good to see. So yeah, on the right hand side, Colt had managed to draw 2 of them away. Dante got himself into the middle, where one of these bounty hunters had moved forward to try and claim the middle of the board. They got into a brawl, and Dante basically pistol whipped the guy. Dante, he doesn't have any combat skill at the moment, but because he's got that pistol, he gets a +1 in a brawl. So that basically made it a fair fight, and the dice roll came off for him. So not only did he hit him, he also wounded him or killed him as well. So that was strike one of the lucky strikes, and it meant Dante was now sitting quite comfortably, or not necessarily comfortably when people are shooting at you, but you know, he had decent cover in the middle of the board. He was right next to the briefcase, and that then meant that there was an opportunity for Dr. Blight to kind of scuttle his way up there and hide behind him too. So meanwhile, out on the left-hand side, Dust had that auto rifle that had a bit of range, and he actually managed to pick off this specialist who was, you know, a bit of a cause for concern, as I was saying. So he shot and killed this specialist. And at that stage, you know, things are looking really good. That's two of them down. We're in quite good positions. And I was starting to think to myself, like, it looks like we might manage this after all. But then, unfortunately, the two bounty hunters who'd moved out to intercept Colt, one of them had got himself round the corner, and Colt really wasn't in any cover at all at that stage. It's just the kind of angle he was at, and he's been gunned down by one of those bounty hunters. So we don't know the damage just yet. I've not done the post-battle sequence. I'll have to figure out, or have to find out what's happened to him. But yeah, at that point, it puts things back in the balance. I'm a man down, and of course, the two bounty hunters who'd peeled off to try and intercept him are now free to turn round and focus again on what's going on in the middle of the table. One of them turned round and had a wee shot at Dr. Blight, who was running up to the middle of the board and trying to get his briefcase. But fortunately, he was in decent cover at that point, and you know, nothing went wrong there. So although that lieutenant had been killed, there was still this specialist to deal with, and Dante just basically charged the guy. He didn't quite have enough range to get to him, but he got far enough towards him that the guy was going to have to basically engage him in a brawl, because those guys, their combat skill is 1 point higher, and that means that, you know, if you get close enough to them, they'll come and fight you hand to hand. And that's what happened, basically. Baited him into a fight, and again, because Dante's got that pistol, it's a fair fight, it's a fair roll-off, and once again, he did succeed in whacking the guy with his gun. This time, he didn't actually kill him, but he did stun him. And at that point, I realised that I had pretty much won the game, because the two guys out on the flank that had shot at Dr. Blight, they'd missed it. That was the only real opportunity for them to kill him. And because they hadn't done so, that was him. He'd basically held that position in the middle of the table next to his briefcase for an entire turn. So that was the victory condition. But, you know, just to see what happened, I played out my turn, and because Dante had this concealed blade, so he defeated the guy in a brawl, pushed him back 1 inch, and because he then started his turn, he had this concealed blade which he was able to throw. You could do this once a turn, so he threw it at the guy, and you know, it stuck into his throat or whatever, and he's killed him. So that was a really satisfying end. Like I say, I'd technically already won at that point, but it was a thematic way to end. And yeah, Dante killing another guy there will give him a wee bit extra XP in the post-battle phase as well. And yeah, I just imagine those remaining two bounty hunters just turning and fleeing, because old Blighty's got his briefcase, his pet rats are all around him, and everyone's happy, apart from Colt, obviously, who's lying up there with half his guts hanging out. So again, we're going to have to find out what's happened to him. Hopefully it's nothing too serious or too expensive. But yeah, that is it for the battle itself. Let's now head to the post-battle sequence. What's got your attention right now in the hobby? What are you painting, playing, or planning for this month? Head on over to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail to submit a clip for our monthly hobby update episode. That link again is bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail. And now back to the show. All right then, it's time for the post-battle phase. And I haven't had a wee flick through the book. It turns out I did perhaps end the battle prematurely, because as much as I had achieved the objective, there was still a role that I really should have done there. So it said, if you've achieved the win condition of your objective, your enemy may give up So what I was supposed to do there was roll 2d6, and if either die is a natural 1, the enemy withdraws and the battle ends immediately with you holding the field. So I had two of these guys left, so, you know, technically I shouldn't have ended the battle there. But I'm going to say that I had them. I had them at that stage. They were on the ropes and they ran away. So, I'm taking the victory there. I'm not going to set it back up and play it again. So on to the post-battle phase then, and the first order of business was to check whether the Ruddles asset recovery bounty hunters were so furious at that defeat that they actually go on to become a rival. And I could confirm that that did, of course, happen. So I've now got my third rival, the Ruddles Asset Recovery Corporation. So that brings me to three rivals. And it's getting to that stage now where I'm thinking, will I be able to fight anyone? Will I be able to do any like patron missions, or am I just going to have to fight rivals from now on? So we'll have to probably assign a couple of my crew to act as decoys in the next pre-battle round. But you know, I'll get to that when I'll get to that, and I'll make some decisions there. So I was able to add the Valtherian Sector Government as a contact patron on this world as well. So I've got, as well as three rivals, I've got three patrons. So that gives me options for getting some extra cash when doing missions. But of course, that does depend on being able to stay clear of these rivals as well. So I earned 6 credits from that encounter. I also found some debris on the battlefield, which I sold for 1 credit. So that brings my total number of credits now to 11. So I've got 11 credits in the kitty. On the loot front, I continued my acquisition of broken stuff. I've got a broken infantry laser, and I've got 3 broken dazzle grenades. So I'm going to have to find one of the crew that wants to fix a broken grenade. Does any job sound worse than that? 3 broken dazzle grenades, 1 broken infantry laser. So what else have I got in the ship stash? A broken marksman rifle. So at some point I'm going to have to look into this and see if there's a cost effective way to fix some of this gear. I don't know if you can sell the broken stuff. I would assume not, but maybe that's worth me looking into too. But anyway, that's a task for another diary entry. Because I come to some sad news. Colt Narrow, who was one of my crew, he was gunned down in that battle, as you know, and I had to roll to find out Colt's fate, and very sadly, Colt's dead. So I rolled quite low and sort of did the double take when I looked at the table. But yeah, Colt's dead. Like, the only silver lining, if you could call it that, is that his equipment was undamaged. He had a scrap pistol. So poor Colt's scrap pistol goes into the ship stash. It was rubbish anyway. But yeah, Colt's dead. Sadly, that's the first proper casualty of my campaign. Pretty early too. He's not been around long. So yeah, that's a shame. And we will be able to recruit without any cost or test or anything like that. I will be able to bring in a 6th crew member. It's only if you extend your crew beyond 6, so if you're trying to get a 7th or 8th or so on, there's some costs and roles and things like that. But I can recruit a new crew member, and we'll get into that when I do the pre-battle phase for the next turn. So yeah, rest in peace, Colt, and I'm sorry it didn't last very long for you. On brighter news, Dante Corsaro, the captain, he earned 5 XP because he took the first casualty and also one of the specialists or lieutenant, I can't remember which was which, but he killed one of them as well, and he was on the winning side. So yeah, 5 XP in total. Dust earned 4 XP because he also killed one of the unique characters and was on the winning side. So that took Dante to 8 XP total, Dust to 7, and I've spent 7 for them both on an extra combat upgrade. So both were sitting at combat 0, which isn't great, obviously. So I've bumped them both up to combat 1. So yeah, hopefully that's a that's a wise investment that might help me to succeed in future battles. As for the campaign events, I found another patron, so I'm just saying to you there, I've got three patrons total. That includes this new patron that I found. So yeah, three patrons in total, three rivals in total. And as for the character event, which was the final thing to do in this phase, I picked out Jaren Creed, who is currently in the sick bay. He still has two more turns to sit out, but you're allowed to pick one of your injured characters to do the character event. And for the first time ever, I think, in my life, I rolled an 100 on the D100. So that says, you've had a lot of time to burn. Next campaign turn, the character may perform an additional action even if they are in sick bay. So that worked out really well for me because he is in fact in sick bay. He's not able to really contribute anything at the moment. So that from my understanding of that, it means that I could send him to trade or explore or act as a decoy for the rivals, I think. I'll have to confirm that in the book, but looks like I'll be able to get some use out of him before the next battle, even if he can't actually take part in the battle itself. So that is really handy, especially when I'm working with such thin numbers at the moment. So, like I say, I will be recruiting a new crew member in the next diary entry. At the moment, we have Dust, Tace is coming back. He missed out in the last turn. And Dante. So that is three that are available, plus the new crew member will bring us to four. Tinhead's going to miss out for one more battle round, and Jaren's going to miss out for two more. And Colt is, of course, dead. So he'll be deleted from Imperial records. That's really harsh. Poor Colt. But yeah, that is a shame because he did have like a combat skill at one, which is not to be sneezed at. Like he was decent. He had a reaction of two as well. So is that better than one? I don't know. Is it? Yeah, I think it is. Anyway, it doesn't matter because he's dead. He's panbred. But yeah, rest in peace, Colt. This one is for you. And look forward to making my preparations for the next campaign turn. We'll go into campaign turn three. We're going to stay on Valthrys. I think there's a wee bit more to do on this world, and plus it keeps the costs down as well. I'll be deciding on whether to pay any ship debt, and I'll be recruiting a new character, and I'll be trying to distribute the meagre equipment that I've got as well amongst the meagre crew, frankly. So yeah, lots to look forward to in the next diary entry. Thanks as always for supporting me on Patreon. I massively appreciate it, and we'll chat again soon. Alright, so we're back for campaign turn 3. The first thing to do was pay my credit for the crew's upkeep, and then I had enough credits to pay some of the ship's debt as well, so I paid 2 credits towards that to take the overall ship debt down to 25. I was obviously in a spending mood. I was maybe feeling a wee bit flush, even though, you know, when you looked at the credits, there wasn't any reason to feel that way. But I decided to also pay 4 credits to repair Tinhead, who was going to miss the next battle. And I thought we could maybe invest in his repairs and just get him back on his feet again for the next encounter. So yeah, I paid out 4 credits to have Tinhead repaired. So Dante himself, he went to recruit a new crew member. Obviously, we lost Colt in the last round, so he was going to recruit, and that would happen by default. There wouldn't need to be any tests or roles or anything like that because our total complement was 5. So we're allowed to just bring somebody in to get us back up to 6. I'll talk about who that was in a second. I also sent Dust to trade along with Tace. Tace went to trade as well. And the outcome, of course, no surprise to anyone who's following along so far, more broken stuff. So we got Tace, he found a hotshot pack, which was broken. I've not even looked at what a hotshot pack is just yet because frankly, it's broken. I've got a big pile of broken stuff to kind of get to at some point. So I'm not sure what it is at this point, sorry, but it's broken. It goes in the broken pile. And what was it Dust got? Tourist garbage. We got one story point for that, some tourist garbage. So fair enough. Jaren as well, he was allowed to undertake a task because of that little character event in the previous round. So I sent Jaren out to explore, and it turns out he had a nice chat and he had the opportunity to roll to gain a story point because of this chat, which he went ahead and failed. So he had a nice chat. He seems to be quite a likeable person, because remember a few rounds ago he made some friends as well. So he's obviously quite a chatty guy. So fair play to him, as long as he's starting to feel better, because of course he's going to miss the upcoming battle and the following one as well. He's got quite a bad injury. But yeah, get yourself out there and enjoy yourself, I suppose, whilst you can. So just thinking of those story points, like I picked up six of them, and I know you could use the story points to overturn certain decisions, to try and point the story in certain ways that's maybe more in keeping with just the flavour of your narrative, I suppose. But I looked and there were some other ways that you could spend these story points as well. I didn't want to suddenly get to the stage where I'm like, I've got 20 story points and not really done anything with them. So you could actually spend them on some stuff. This is a kind of once per round option that you've got. So I sold one story point for 3 credits. And then I sold another story point to give Jaren 3 XP. And then he had enough to update his combat score. So I've updated his combat score to 3, which is pretty formidable. Again, he's lying on the treatment table at the moment when he's not out socialising. But when he comes back, he's looking pretty good. And one story point, a final story point for the time being, I spent that and gave Dante the opportunity to do a second task. He went out to explore. So when Dante went out to explore, the exploration result was someone wants a package delivered. It says, when you travel to a new world, if this crew member is still in the crew, earn 3 credits and roll 1d6. On a 1-2, you've acquired a rival and receive 1 story point. So he's basically going to be a drug mule. I've always had this idea for a film about a drug mule, and it would be called Pass the Parcel. But when we finally leave Valthrus, Dante will be off to the bathroom with a small package and some Vaseline by the looks of things. Now, we have 3 patrons, and one of our patrons is indeed the Valthirian sector government. So we were offered a job with 3 credits of danger pay, and it must be done this turn. The conditions were demanding as well. So that looked like the opportunity to get some extra cash. But of course, we've got 3 rivals as well, and one of our newest rivals is Ruddle's Asset Recovery, and we had to roll to make sure that they weren't going to track us down this turn, but you know they actually did. So the patron job had to get cancelled because we are going to be attacked by Ruddle's Asset Recovery, and the rival attack type is a raid. So it says, if you fail to hold the field, your ship will take 1d6 plus 1 points of hull point damage. If you have a spaceship model, it should be placed dramatically on the table for this mission so that you have a visual reminder of what you are defending. So on top of that, we had a toxic environment condition as well. I'm just taking a look at what that means. So toxic environment, whenever a combatant is stunned, roll 1d6 plus savvy skill. Failure to roll a 4+ becomes a casualty. So Ruddle's Asset Recovery, we're going to have 5 bounty hunters and the run-of-the-mill guys, the rank-file guys, are rolled poorly for them. They're only going to be carrying scrap pistols. Maybe that's in tribute to Colt, because that was his weapon of choice. But yeah, scrap pistols, not going to give me a whole lot of bother, I would think. They've got a range of about 9, which means they can't really sit back and try and pick me off. Like, they're going to have to advance quite far up the board. They're going to have to put themselves in quite vulnerable positions, and it looks like I'll have a bit more ranged capability this time around. I mean, frankly, I couldn't have any less than last time around. But yeah, that's really good news for me. The specialist has a marksman's rifle and the lieutenant has an auto rifle, so that does give them, you know, that does give them some firepower. And the lieutenants are always a bit tougher as well. They're a bit of a better shot and a bit more of a danger. But yeah, I'd be facing up 5v5 with, of course, the lieutenant and the specialist. So time to take these details and build it into our narrative. Here's what I came up with. The Valthirian sector government has just declared its 17th pandemic of the year. Nothing to do with Dr. Blight, as always, according to the man himself, who's already released a statement condemning baseless android conspiracy theories. Amid the chaos, the government has offered the Lucky Strikes an urgent contract to assist with outbreak management. This is the kind of job nobody sane volunteers for, which makes the strikes exactly qualified. But they won't get the chance. While the crew are grounded at the Cinder Dock, a sagging, half-condemned patch of tarmac that generously calls itself a spaceport, Ruddle's asset recovery tracks them down and hits them whilst they're enjoying a few beers and listening to Barry Gibb's 1984 solo album, New Voyager. The strikes are, on balance, fine with this. Their last encounter with Ruddle's asset recovery cost them a crewmate, Colt Narrow, who was shot dead during the sludge basin job. Captain Dante Corsaro had planned to pay these goons a visit soon anyway, so he's more than happy to have them come round to his place. Colt's replacement is a new recruit called Scully. Scully reached out to the Lucky Strikes after the sludge basin job, thanking them for getting one over on Ruddle's asset recovery. Turns out Scully's been getting bothered by them ever since he left one of Tin Martian's pubs a bad review on TripAdvisor. Now he'll have the opportunity to review these bounty hunters through the scope of his gun. So there we go, that sets us up nicely. And yeah, one thing that like always really satisfies me about Parsecs is when you've got this ongoing narrative, anything you seem to roll up, I know there will be exceptions now and then, and that's why we've got the story points to an extent, but you're rolling up stuff and it's like, of course this is happening, or of course that's happening, and it just seems to fit. And you know, even if you have to stretch a wee bit, there's always ways to make things work. So yeah, that really pleases me about Parsecs. I really like that narrative and just the little unexpected twists and turns and trying to fit them into your story as well. So very, very satisfying. And yeah, that's the pre-battle sequence, and now we'll move forward to preparing for the battle itself. Okay, then on to the battle itself, and the Lucky Strikes are taken by surprise here. They're having a nice couple of beers, just chilling outside their ship, Old Reliable, parked in a rundown spaceport called the Cinder Dock, and suddenly they realise that Ruddle's asset recovery have come back for more. So yeah, they quickly, you know, get themselves into some positions, take some cover, and they know, I mean, they could maybe see at this stage, like the Ruddle's asset recovery bounty hunters, they're not so well armed this time around, maybe because of that beating that they took in the last round. So yeah, they take some cover and are just quite happy to let these guys come to them. So I did swap out Scully's handgun. Scully is a new recruit. He comes with a baseline human profile and just a handgun, which is pretty rubbish. So Jaren wasn't using his shotgun. That's a fair bit better. It's got an extra shot and a point of damage. So gave Scully a wee shot of that and deployed him out on the right flank. I put Tace out to cover the left. And through the centre, I had Dust, Dante and Tinhead. So again, the idea was that these bounty hunters, they don't have much ranged capability. They're going to have to make their way forward to try and get into range. And hopefully I'll just be able to sit and pick them off quite comfortably. And you know what? It started pretty badly for me. Like I did... I did pass a few quick reaction rolls on the very first turn and realised that there really wasn't anything to do. I didn't want to move too much out of my positions, and I'd deployed the Ruddles asset recovery guys in a way that they couldn't just be shot. They were in a really good cover at that stage. So there wasn't much to be done. Just had to wait and see what would happen when they activated. And it was their specialist with the auto rifle that popped out of cover and took a shot at Dust and actually took him out. So that was a really bad start for me. The first shot that they've taken, and they've wiped somebody out. And then I was fearing the worst because their lieutenant had a shot at Tinhead, but fortunately he missed. And then Tinhead immediately replied when I activated and killed the lieutenant. So suddenly things were looking a lot better. It was huge to get rid of that guy. And the added bonus was at the end of that turn, one of the Ruddles asset recovery bounty hunters panicked and fled the board. So at that point I was thinking, you know, maybe a bad start, but maybe not a disaster in the end. But this was going to be a swingy encounter because next time around it was their specialist. He took out Tinhead. So again, that's Dust and Tinhead out. And back in the balance, I guess. And certainly more casualties than I'd hoped to encounter in this battle. I was really going into this pretty confident. Did not expect to be getting this much grief from them. So yeah, then it nearly got worse. Scully was shot at and stunned, and because of the toxic environment, he had to take a special role to make sure that he was okay. And I'm tying this into, you know, Dr. Blight's latest pandemic. So yeah, there's something toxic in the environment, and he basically had to see if he was going to be fine there. Fortunately, he passed that role, and he was. So it was a lot more dangerous in this battle getting shot at. There were bounty hunters on each flank at this stage. The specialist was kind of remaining in the middle, and I took Dante out of the way at that stage because even though he was behind cover, I seemed to be rolling very well on the bounty hunter's behalf. So I just evacuated Dante from that position and just got him behind the wall where he couldn't be shot at all at this stage, because, you know, he's only got a range with that dueling pistol of, 9 inches? I think it's 9 inches. So, you know, he seems to be pretty good in hand-to-hand combat, especially because he's got that pistol that he could use as a hand weapon. But there was no real benefit to him just sitting there waiting to be shot at. So I moved him out the road. Scully, when he activated, had the chance to reply at that bounty hunter that shot at him. He only stunned him, but then the bounty hunter did fail that role for the toxic environment. So he was eliminated. He fell victim to Dr. Blight's pandemic. So that was good to see. And then that caused the specialist, who was acting the big man, he suddenly turned and ran away as well. So there was only one of them left at that stage. And I was thinking, you know, I do think now I've got this wrapped up. But again, you know, I've certainly suffered more casualties than I had hoped or expected to. So this last bounty hunter, he's kind of peeking around the corner at this small building. Tace is on the other side, peeking around the other corner, and they're both trading shots for what feels like, you know, 5 or 6 turns, nobody doing anything at all. But meanwhile, Dante and Scully were able to close in around the back. Dante creeps up on the guy and gets the old dueling pistol out and breaks the boy's jaw. So he killed him, and that put an end to these Ruddles asset recovery bounty hunters' antics. We held the field, won the battle, and I couldn't wait to see at the end what Ruddles asset recovery were going to make of this, because again, they were a rival going into this. So it says in the post-battle activities, if you've just fought against an existing rival and held the field, roll 1d6, add in a +1 if you track them down during the assign and resolve crew tasks, which I didn't, and +1 if you killed a unique individual in the battle, which I did. So on a 4 or better, they've had enough and you can remove them from your rivals list. So I rolled a 3
and adding on that one as well because I killed their lieutenant. So that meant that, yeah, they had had enough. So what I'm taking that as, because I've just beaten them over two different battles, killed quite a few of them, and basically I'm taking that as they've went into administration now. They're no longer financially viable, and yeah, they've had to fold the company. So get that right up you, Ruddles Asset Recovery. Hopefully that's the last that we've seen of them, and that does knock me down from three rivals to two. So, you know, at some point, Directive Zero, I'm going to have them in my sights and hopefully do the same to them as well. All right, then, other post-battle business. We were paid 4 credits for our troubles, and I believe this has caused us to lose our patron that the Valtirian government, it says in the book, failing a job you've accepted from a known patron causes them to be removed from your list of known patrons. So, yeah, I'm interpreting that myself. I mean, I didn't fail it on the battlefield, but I did accept the job and then wasn't able to complete it. I only had one turn to do it, so I guess that counts as a failure. So, yeah, I'm thinking that the government would have had enough of us at that point. So that does bring us down to 2 patrons to equal our 2 rivals as well. So I went into this turn with 3 and 3. I've now got 2 and 2. So as to what we found on the battlefield after that encounter, a personal trinket. It says, on each planet you visit in future, roll 2d6. On a 9+, you find the owner and receive a loot roll as payment. And speaking of loot, we also had the opportunity to roll on the loot table. So I came up with rewards and ship parts. It says, discount your next ship component purchase by 1d6 credits. Establish the value now. So I rolled a 5. So I've got 5 credits towards any component that I buy for my ship in future. I've actually never done that before, but maybe a wee incentive to look into that in the near future. Okay, the moment you've been waiting for. So what happened to Dust and Tinhead, who were gunned down in the battle there, and do they suffer the same fate as their late teammate Colt? I'm pleased to say the answer is no. So Tinhead only encountered minor damage. He's just got a few bullet holes that are going to need repaired, and he'll miss the next campaign turn for repairs, unless, of course, I decide to spend another 4 credits to incentivize the mechanic to get that job done a bit quicker. And Dust himself, rolling a 98 on the D100, it says the School of Hard Knocks earn 1 XP. So that really could not have gone any better for me there. What a way to get shot and taken out of the game. So yeah, he won't pick up any injuries, any effects. He won't miss any turns. He'll simply pick up 1 XP. Speaking of XP, there was some more to dish out. So everyone who survived and won got 3 XP. That was Dante, that was Scully, and that was Tace. And I think that was actually it, yeah, because Tinhead, he's a bot, he doesn't get any, and he was also the one who took out the first casualty, who was also a unique individual. So he would have, if he was human, if he had a heart, he would have got some XP there, but he doesn't because he's a big old robot. So yeah, that puts Dust, he's got 2 points, Tace has got 4, Scully's got 3, Danny's got 4, so a few of them aren't far off getting some upgrades. And I think I'm maybe wanting to spend a bit of XP getting the savvy scores up, because I'm finding I'm you know, experiencing a few roles that are reliant on savvy for a bit of a buff, and I've not got any. Well, Tinhead's got 2, but again, he's a robot. But anyway, yeah, I'm going to spend some XP on savvy upgrades when possible. As for the character event, because it was Scully's debut, I thought I'd focus on him. So he managed to earn a little on the side. He received 2 credits, which was nice to pop that into our kitty as well. So yeah, it's a good day for him. He's finally shook off Ruddle's Asset Recovery, and he's managed to earn some extra money there, and hopefully the respect of his new crewmates. And the campaign event as well, you sell off some cargo you acquired on the last planet, you earn 1d6 credits, and I managed to roll a 5 again there, so 5 more credits going into the kitty. That takes me up to 15 credits in total, which I think is the most money we've ever had so far, but again, I know how quickly that could turn. So, I can't say I'm unhappy with that. Like, again, you know, getting two of the crew gunned down in that battle was worrying at times, especially because you don't know what's going to happen to them after the battle. But I mean, that really couldn't have worked out any better. I know Tinhead's going to miss a turn or cost me some extra money, but really, in the grand scheme of things, I'm fine with that. Dust got off totally scot-free. In fact, he benefited from it, and we gave the Ruddles asset recovery guys a good old beating as well. So yeah, very, very happy with how that went. And as it stands, 2 patrons, 2 rivals, 3 story points going into campaign turn 4 next. We've got 15 credits, 25 credits in our ship debt. Our ship's totally intact. It's got 35 hull points. If we'd lost that battle there, that would have been a different story. The ship definitely would have been damaged. So can't really complain, and looking forward to see what comes next. Obviously now with the Valtherian government, they'll no longer be interested in us, and certainly Ruddle's asset recovery, I've had more than enough as well. They're a way to sort out their affairs and, you know, enter the company into liquidation, I suppose, the guys that are left alive. And we'll see what happens from here. Still not planning to leave this world just yet. I think there's a wee bit more we could maybe do. But we'll see what's ahead of us in campaign turn 4.
All right, so there you go. That's my 5 Parsecs from Home audio diary so far. As I said at the beginning, and as you could probably tell from the last hour, I'm really loving this game, and it's definitely helped keep me actively involved in the hobby in what's otherwise a really busy time for me. At the moment, I'm playing it on a weekly basis, which is more than I've ever gamed before, and I've been releasing these audio diaries each week on my Patreon too, alongside bonus Q&A sessions with recent podcast guests. If you want to access all of that bonus content, head on over to bedroombattlefields.com/Patreon or check the link in the show notes. And for as little as a fiver a month, you could follow the adventures of the Lucky Strikes right through until their ultimate victory or eventual demise. Only time, dice, and maybe Tin Martian himself will tell how it's all going to pan out for them. Thanks as always for listening to the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast, and we'll chat again on the next one.